The Will Cain Show podcast is presented by Eno, the Capital One assistant. What's in your wallet?
Hey, what's up, folks? Today, I hang out with ESPN football analyst and my friend, Damian Woody. Over the years, Damian and I have talked about sports. We've talked about race. We've talked about politics. We've talked about all of these things on and off air. I think our friendship has been one that has been earned through that process. So over the next hour, I can't make you any promises. I can't tell you this is going to lead to a conclusion as we discuss everything going on in this country, from George Floyd to the current riots from city to city. I can't tell you it has a specific direction. All I can tell you is it's two guys with mutual respect and an earned friendship making our way best we can through the most muddled, divisive times we've had in decades. I hope it helps. I hope it's productive. All I can promise is Damian, Woody, and I are real.
Capital One knows life doesn't alert you about your credit card. That's why we created Eno, the Capital One assistant that looks out for surprise credit card charges like overtipping, duplicate charges, or potential fraud, then sends an alert to your phone and helps if you need to fix them. Another way Capital One is watching out for your money when you're not. Capital One, what's in your wallet? See CapitalOne.com for details.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So, at GEICO, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now, it's our turn to share with the GEICO Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
Here we are, Damian. We are a little over 1 week since the killing of George Floyd. I think, rough estimation, we are 5 nights since protests started over the death of George Floyd, and probably 4 nights of extreme riots in conjunction or next to these protests since the killing of George Floyd. Man, how are you feeling today?
You know, well, I'm a glass half full type of guy, so I'm always try to look at things in the positive, and I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful that with everything that's been going on, that we will finally get some momentum for folks to have conversation out there, real substantive conversation, because that's exactly what we need as a country. We need to stop avoiding the one topic that I think as a country that we've avoided since its inception. And that's race in America. It seems like we constantly run from it. And I've always had a saying, and this applies not only in sports but in life, get comfortable with being uncomfortable, because change is uncomfortable. Nobody really likes change. It takes you out of your comfort zone. And the only way that we can move forward as a country, the only way we can have a more perfect union, which I think most people want in this country, is for everyone to be put in an uncomfortable position where we have to face our demons, face the truth, deal with it, talk about it, and talk about the changes that need to happen for us to move forward collectively.
Damian, you're singing my song. You may or may not know that, but the idea of uncomfortable conversations is what I'm built on. It's instinctual for me. It's where I find all growth and, by the way, all entertainment. But I have to ask you, whenever stuff like this happens, and we are certainly at an extreme moment, but we went through something similar in 2015-16. Of course, in the early 90s, we had protests and riots. Of course, in the 60s, we've been through this as well. People say something similar to what you just said is, we need to have a conversation. We need to have an uncomfortable conversation. But you know what I don't believe, Damian? That we're all on the same page about what that conversation should sound like or who it should even include. And I'm curious, when you say that, we need to have a conversation, in your mind, what kind of conversation are you imagining?
My conversation is, for me, coming from a black man, is, why are you so uncomfortable around people like me, people that look like me? Why is that? Because you ask any black person out here, because we all have a lot of similar incidences, stories, whatever you want to call it, where you'll be in the presence, you know, in the presence of white people. They kind of clutch their items. They look at you. They walk the other way. Why? Why is that? Why do I scare you? What is it about me that instills fear in you? Can we start there and then work our way out to whatever topic, whatever that's on your mind? See, Will, I grew up in a very rural area in Central Virginia. I grew up very poor. I grew up around very poor white people. I grew up around, you know, brown people. I grew up around rednecks, guys who had Confederate flags and rifles in the back of the truck. But you know what? The one thing that I can honestly say, that was the best. I wouldn't trade my upbringing for anything in the world, because I was exposed to so many different people, and I was able to have conversations, legit conversations, with so many people from so many different backgrounds, that it made me who I am right now. And I think the problem that we have is everything is so tribal in our country. Everyone is in their own bubbles. They hang with their own type of people, and they don't have exposure to different people. So everyone has these assumptions, these stereotypes about people, and it's not right. That's what gets me frustrated, because I know all cops aren't bad. Just like I know all white people aren't bad, aren't racist. But until people are able to disengage from their tribes, disengage from their bubbles, we will never advance as a country. That's why I keep going back to getting comfortable with being uncomfortable. Get uncomfortable in your environment. If you see something that you know is clearly wrong, why would you sit back idle and say it's okay? If that calls you to lose a friend, then they're not your friend. And guess what? It's the same thing in the black community. I'm not just posing this just for white people. It's the same in the black community. If I see something that I know is not right, you damn sure I'm going to call it out. And if we can't be buddy buddies anymore, fine, so be it. Because I prefer a smaller circle anyway. I want true, real people around me anyway. That's what we got. We have to start there. We need to start there. We need to break from these stereotypes. We need to break from these bubbles and tribes that we as a collective have in this country.
Hey, Damien, I'm curious, the way you describe your upbringing, then at what point in your life did you experience what you describe for us, that pearl clutching, that fear, that sense of the other? I know the answer has to be, Will, through my entire life. But you also describe being around people who were different than you in an appreciative way most of your life. So I'm curious, when this sense, this underlying motivation, this underlying feeling you have where we started this conversation really became pronounced?
You know, actually, I would say actually it really came to focus in college. And for me, you know, for anybody who don't know my background, I went to Boston College, and I've always said there's something about the fact that, you know, I'm a big black guy. And like I would, you know, me and my friends, we would go out and people would just look at me crazy because I'm like this, I stand out in the room. And will anyone, you know me, everyone that knows me knows that I'm one of the kindest people that you'll ever come across. But for people to automatically assume, because I'm a big black guy, that I'm a threat, like that's when it first started hitting me. And then, you know, there's so many other instances where I get pulled over for no reason, like no explanation, no reason. Well, why are you around this neighborhood? Excuse me, officer, I live here. Well, what do you do for a living? Why is that in your business? I live here. I pay taxes just like the next person. Why am I getting asked, what do I do? Why am I in this neighborhood when I own a home in this neighborhood? So it's not about, when it comes to black people, class doesn't have anything to do with it. Money doesn't have anything to do with it. We've all experienced it. So people, myself and other black folks, are just tired, man. Are just tired. We shouldn't have to deal with that type of stuff. And these are the conversations we've had with white folks many times. But, you know, a big problem is some people dismiss it. Oh, here we go again. You're pulling a race card. You know, I don't believe you. Why would I lie about something like that? Listen, at the end of the day, I want what you want. Will, you and I, we're both married. We have families. I want for my kids to grow up in a safe environment, you know, good school, you know, just a good environment where I can raise my kids. That's all I want. That's all black folks want. That's it. I want to be treated the same way as you. But until you start listening to the experiences that we as black folks go through, then we can't begin to heal and move forward as a country.
You know, that last thing you said about until you begin listening to the experiences that we go through, we won't understand or heal. That particular thing you said, that phrase, I have to tell you, Damien, I've come to appreciate it more in the most recent years of my life. Now, I want to come back to that, okay? I want to tell you the growth I feel like I've been through. And it's not going to be what everybody wants to hear because we all have to grow in our own ways. Truthfully, mine's about emotion versus facts and data versus personal experience. But I want to come back to that. And I also want to talk to you about what's gone on the streets over the last 4 or 5 nights. And I also want to talk to you specifically about George Foley, but I also want to tell you what I envision in this conversation, okay? I asked you, how do you envision this quote-unquote conversation everybody talks about? I'd like to tell you how I envision it. It's you and me right now. Because here's the thing that I have found out. To answer your question about why people pearl clutch and why people break up into groups and look at each other wary, I think you hit on it, man. We're inherently tribal. That doesn't make it good. And by the way, that doesn't make it entirely bad. People gravitate to others who they have common ground with, right? And that can, like a cancer, metastasize into things like race and racism. I truly believe that. It can also create very supportive communities with each other. But what happens, I think, Damien, is people look at each other, A, on race, B, on gender. You know, you go to a party, the women often end up talking to the women and the men end up talking to the men. Why? Because of commonality, right? If you and I are from the South, we're probably going to gravitate towards the same discussion as opposed to somebody who grew up in a city in the North, right? So we just do this. We look for shorthand. What I have found for me and is there's probably another tribe that I really appreciate, and I don't know any other way to say it except it's dudes. And I don't mean to push away women from that, because I think women can be a part of that idea of dudes. But for me, it's like, you know why I like you, Damien? And I use this, and people, I think people can think it's a cliche. It's because you and I are real with each other. Like, all of a sudden, I appreciate the relationship I'm in. Black, white, male, female. We're not doing happy talk. We're not trying to make each other like each other. Right? We're not trying to say the right things. We're just being real. And all of a sudden, I feel like, okay, this is life, man. This is what it's about. And you know, I think sports does have a way of bringing people who appreciate that kind of thing together more. I do think that. But when I wanted to have this conversation, I wanted to have it with you. And it's not under the pretext that we're going to agree on everything. And it's not under the idea that I'm going to say everything you want me to say. And Damon, that's one of the reasons I have trouble with social media. I look at it and a lot of people are saying wonderful things. Can I tell you a weakness of mine, Damon? I look at social media right now and everybody's saying we need white people to say X and everybody needs to say Y. And I start thinking, what's everybody's motivation? It's not right of me, man, because I'm judging people and the motivations can be pure, but all of a sudden I don't want to partake because it's taken that one thing that I believe in, Damien, and it's put it up to question. Is that real or is that done for likes? Is that real or is that done so that your colleagues will think you are enlightened? I have trouble with that, man. And so when I look for the conversation, I just keep gravitating. Which dudes can I be real with? Who'll tell me if he thinks I'm full of a**, right? You'll tell me if you think I'm full of a**. So will Marcus. So will other guys I respect, because it isn't about you saying, Will, you know, I believe in you or you're right. It's not about that to me. It's just, hey, can we be real with each other? And so this conversation, you and I won't agree on everything, right? But I think that's what I look for. And honestly, Damien, back to you said, why do some people act this way or why do they? That's my tribe, man. My tribe is, are you real or are you not? I'm not pretending like I'm totally racially enlightened. You know that. I don't think that. Nobody is, truthfully. We all have shorthand and assumptions and stereotypes, don't we? We, every one of us, have that. The challenge is overcoming it. And for me, my step in overcoming it is finding people, men, women, black, white, whatever, who are real with each other.
Well, listen, man, I agree with everything you just said. Listen, in regards to social media, I tell people all the time, social media is not the real world. Social media is one thing. The real world is something else. You know, a lot of times social media is out on the fringes. So I don't get too caught up in social media. I'm all about what the main street. I'm all about going and talking to people, sitting down in a diner, having a cup of coffee. Let's chop it up. Let's really talk about what's going on out here. To me, that's real. Social media, that stuff can get, you know, played out and overblown. Everybody likes to do things, like you said, for likes and retweets and all those type of things. But there's not a lot of substance behind it. I'm in total agreement as far as that is concerned.
Let's go back to this. I got to tell you, Damien, and just being real with each other, I'm really disappointed in what's happened over the last 5 days. Here's what I thought. When George Floyd was killed, you know what was striking to me, man? An amazing amount of unity, like right, left, white, black. I don't know of any notable person who said or defended Derek Chauvin, the officer. Everybody looked at that and goes, this is awful and this is wrong. But now I see what's going on the streets and I see this country pulling at each other in opposite directions. And I'm like, over the last couple of days, it doesn't feel to me as optimistic as it sounded to you at the beginning of our conversation.
Now let me say this right here, because this is where you got to weed things out. The one thing I tweeted something this morning. I said, stay focused. I just said those two words, because what can happen in these instances, there are bad actors out there who is trying to distort the message that needs to be sent across the country. And the media has play a big part in distorting the message as well. You can't get caught up in some of these bad actors out there, because there's a critical problem that still needs to be addressed. See, if we get distracted, it takes us off message. It takes us from really moving forward as a country. And so for me, I get frustrated when I watch the media. I don't care. And both sides are doing it. The left and the right, showing all these things about, you know, the looting and all those type of things, when actually there are a lot of people who are stopping these looters, who are protesting peacefully. But a lot of it is the media is projecting a message. And that's what pisses me off, because to me, like, they have an obligation. If they truly want things to move forward, then they have an obligation to tell the story of what's going on, not just showing pictures of some, you know, some of these fools out here who are just in it just to create a disturbance and create more chaos. We have to stay on point. We have to stay on message. We truly want to move forward. We can't get distracted.
On the media, let's do that really quickly and what they're showing us. I agree, man. I have to tell you, we need context. I am susceptible, like everybody else, Damian, to anger. And when I see pictures of shop owners being beaten by either protesters or rioters or hired anarchists, whoever it may be, I get angry. I'll be real with you, Damian.
I'm right. Listen, if there's one thing we can agree on, we definitely can agree on that, because it pisses me off to see people who, I mean, have built these things from the ground. Some of these people, especially like some of these black-owned businesses, have put their blood, sweat, and tears into these businesses, and they were already hanging on by a thread anyway before all of this uprising started. And then for people to come in and to just torch these small businesses, it pisses me off on a lot of different fronts. So we definitely can agree on that.
Well, we're going to agree on more than that through this conversation. I can promise you that. But yeah, man, look, and if I'm watching a lady in Rochester, New York, get beaten by four or five men, if I'm watching a bystander in Dallas, Texas, get kicked in the teeth when he's down, there's just a cowardliness that I see that then turns into anger. But I also know something. Two things. A, it's awful and I should get angry. B, to your point, how representative of it is this entire protest? And I think the media can do a much better job of providing us context of what's going on in each city. The protest is X large. The riot is Y large. I would like to know that. But when I see images of a historic church in Washington, D.C. burning down, I'll just tell you, that's the only one that's resonating with me, and my anger rises. And you're right. Some of that anger should be directed at the media, because it's showing me one picture, not one of a thousand pictures. And then I go, by the way, Damian, I go, what happened to the coronavirus? 4 or 5 days ago, that was the biggest story of the half century. And it was told, don't go outside. Don't get in groups. And now it's nowhere, man. What's your job, media?
I will. It is so funny, man, because I swear I was having this conversation with my wife this morning about that very topic. And it's just like, listen, no one's trying to downplay the coronavirus. But at the same time, there's a lot of scaring about this coronavirus, because this whole coronavirus story is non-existent. I mean, we're literally in a pandemic, and there's been no discussion about it. So you can't go from the world is going to die to not even talking about it. Like, it makes you look silly as far as the media is concerned, as you know, regarding like scare tactics about this whole coronavirus.
I think it's been massively exposing and makes me draw real questions, as you point out, to the seriousness of it from the beginning. I'm just saying, if it was that important before, it's this important today as well. And we're actually doing what you told us not to do. We're going outside in large groups and getting in close quarters together with very little stopping us from breathing on each other. So one of these two things is not adding up, and it makes me really question. Back to your point, the media's role in all this. Are you informing us, or are you telling us salacious stories and dividing us? I know that you and I are members of the media. And I guess that's the point again of this conversation, is to try to be better than what we see on a constant basis. Let's go back to the protests for just a minute, rather even the riots. You know what else I would like the media to tell me, Damian? Tell me more of who's who. Like, I need to know who's lighting things on fire. I need to know if these are, you know, paid protesters, paid rioters, rather. I need to know if it's anarchist groups. I need to know how much of it is just pent up anger from an issue that many in the black community feel unheard for decades, centuries, in fact. And I need to know how much of it is people out there on the streets who have been unemployed and stuck in their houses for 2 or 3 months and now are looking for outlets for expressions of violence. And I know the truth is, Damien, probably nobody can answer all those questions. But without those answers, it all becomes simplistic and tribal in one group again.
Well, and I think you bring up a great point, because the one thing I've noticed is watching coverage from all different angles is there's just been a lack of these news outlets really talking to the people. It's been like correspondents out there reporting, well, talk to the people. Like, literally, put a microphone to these people out here and let them talk and let them tell their story. That's what I want to hear. A lot of times when we see uprisings across the world, the one thing that you'll see correspondents letting the people talk and telling their story. But here it is, we having an uprising in our own country, and you don't even really see that many news outlets with correspondents just going about and just talking to the people about it. It's almost like they're trying to, one way or the other, frame their own agenda, which I just don't appreciate. That's why I said the media can do a much better job of letting the people tell their story.
Go back to George Floyd in just a moment, but one more thing on these riots. You brought it up, man. So many people have been hanging on by a thread for 3 months, and to watch their businesses destroyed now, and we're talking about, as you pointed out, black and brown owned businesses, probably primarily black and brown owned businesses because of the location and neighborhoods in which many of these riots are taking place. It's just tragic to see people. And if I could say two individuals I thought really stepped up, and everybody has said this, but I think it's worth repeating, it's the mayor of Atlanta and it's Killer Mike, who saw the damage to the city that they had built, you know, not alone, but with many, many others, thousands of others in Atlanta, and to see everything they've built. And then on top of that, other people who have been trying to just survive for 3 months have the cord cut to survival. It's just tragic.
Yeah. Listen, I was, for anyone out there who haven't watched, the mayor of Atlanta, Keisha Lance Bottoms and Killer Mike, please go, you know, whether it be on Twitter or YouTube, please go find it and watch it, because I thought it was incredible in what they say. Atlanta is, you know, one of the few what we call black cities. I think it's like majority black city ran with minorities for the most part. And I just think that one of the things that both of them said was, listen, we've worked so hard to build this thing the right way, to be a beacon for other cities, and to have looters and rioters come in and try to destroy these things, we can't have that. We are not going to tolerate it. We're not going to have it. And I thought they struck the right chord, the right message. It was just a beautiful thing to watch, in my opinion. And what made it even better, when they aired it, the TV station didn't edit out anything. They were just using whatever type of language they wanted to use, but it made it more authentic. So I advise everybody to go watch it, because I think those two people really show leadership in the moment.
Damien, outside of the conversation that you hope to see from this, let's limit this to the legitimate protests now, and even those who aren't in the protest who want to see, as you said, productive change. What do you want to see in the short term? Meaning, what do you want to see happen in Minneapolis, and what do you want to see in the long term for this country?
Couple things. You know, I talked about conversations. Really, change can only happen. People look at, well, we need change at the top. No. Change starts at the bottom. Change starts in your homes, in your communities. So for me, if you want real change, start there. What are we teaching our children? What kind of value system we have at home? What kind of value system that we have in our community? What are we tolerating in our communities? As far as Minneapolis is concerned, you know, everything that I've read, there's been a history of discord between the police department and the community. Well, why is that? What type of standards, what type of rules, what the infrastructure in that police department that needs to change? Have better community policing. Interact with the community more. And then I think at the end of the day, people need to be more involved, more engaged in the political system. Change will only come if you're involved. I hate when I hear some people say, well, I don't vote because it doesn't make a difference. The hell it doesn't. It doesn't matter if you're on the right, if you're on the left. If you don't vote, somebody else will. Be engaged in the political process. Because if you're not, I don't want to hear a damn thing about why one way or another way if you're not engaged in the political process. It is literally your right to be able to vote. And for you to not exercise that, it makes you look like a damn fool.
You know, I think about protests and I think, what is the productive purpose of a protest? What do you want to accomplish? And I want to answer the question I asked you as well. I want to go short term first. That part has been difficult because, as I said, there was almost universal condemnation of Derek Chauvin. Everyone looked at that and said, this is awful. I think there is a question about what's appropriate to charge him. I think some people on the street, some people you'll hear interviews say, why is it third degree murder? Why haven't the other officers been charged? Why is it not first degree murder? For me, I look at that and I think it's not just like a scale of which one are you most upset by, right? You're more upset by a murder than it goes to first degree. It has real legal definitions. And I don't think that Derek Chauvin will get convicted of third degree murder. I looked it up. In Minnesota, it's a reckless act with a depraved mind. And I know somebody listen and go, well, that's what that looked like to me. Truthfully, the way that was applied in Minnesota was for like a man who or woman who would drive their car into a crowd. It would be someone who randomly fires a gun into a crowd. It's not targeted and specific to an individual. But I don't think first-degree murder is also going to work because that requires premeditation. And I don't think you'd have much luck in convincing people, a jury, that Derek Chauvin woke up that day thinking about how he could kill George Floyd. But second-degree murder, I think, would be something that could be accomplished, where that means you commit murder in the act of committing another felony. And I think somebody could look at that and go, that's felony assault. 9 minutes, and it resulted in his death. So for me, short term, I do think they could improve the charges on this officer. I do think they could go for second degree murder, but I don't think we can begin to think of it as, if it's not first degree murder, it's an injustice. And I am worried that some will think that without really knowing what the legal application of all that is.
No, I'm not the legal mind. You know, your background's a lawyer, so you have more insight into, you know, how the specific charges lay out. But I do agree as far as people want to look and they're going to want the max. But right. You got to understand our legal system and how it's laid out, and you know what charges apply in particular, you know, particular situations. So I think the bigger picture is people want justice. You know, we talk about certain principles in this country, and justice should be blind. Shouldn't it attach a color to it? And I mean, that's what people want more so than anything in this country. We want things applied evenly all the way around. And I think that could be a start. But again, I'm just going to go back to, if people want change, because this is going to subside. This is going to calm down. But see, where I go from this is, once everything calms down, then what? Do we go back to the status quo, or do we keep the same energy moving forward? And the only way we get real change is people have to be engaged. They have to be engaged, and that's why it goes to me. It goes back to what Killer Mike was talking about, you know, in his speech was, you got to, you know, strategize, You know, you got to do all these different principles in order to create real change collectively as a country. And that's where I'm eager to see, where do we go from here? There's a lot of anger, a lot of pent-up anger, but you have to be able to transfer that into something more substantive in order to reap the long-term gains in the long haul.
Okay, this is a good place to return to what I said earlier, the phrase you used I wanted to talk about, listening to others' personal experience. So I want to rewind the clock to a couple years ago when I was doing First Take more frequently, and the topic was Colin Kaepernick and the protest in 2016. You and I were first getting to know each other at that time. And this was the trouble that I always had, and I still have trouble with, okay? When we use words like justice, or more specifically, but I still think too abstractly, systemic racism, I think those need to be defined. Change. What change do you want? I think that needs to be defined. I think that, A, it's the only way to have a productive conversation, and B, it's the only way to have real change, because you got to know what you're wanting to change from and towards. So when we would have those conversations on First Take or on ESPN Radio or wherever it might be, I would always push for that. I would say, what is specifically what Kaepernick wants to change? And I would say to you, Damian, what specifically do you want to change? And we're going to back our way now into that lived personal experience that I talked about. But let's start with that, Damian. Like, what do you specifically want changed? I know it's frustrating when I ask that, because I have been having these kind of conversations with you and others for years, and I have sensed, oh, they don't like it when I ask this question. But I think it's an important question.
And I want to go back to what I just said a few minutes ago. To me, I think what black folks want is for justice to be blind. I think what black folks want is we want to be treated the same. And then from there, what has to happen is now we have to start framing things from a specific policy standpoint. How do we achieve that? What do we have to do? Does training have to be altered? Policy have to be changed? How do we take something so abstract and literally condense it to where we're seeing real change happen on the ground? Now, Will, I'm not a politician, I'm not a lawyer. All I can do is voice, just from an abstract perspective, things that I see, things that I have experienced. And then all I can do is, okay, well, let me go work with some people who know more about how to condense it down for specific change. And that's where people have to work with lawmakers, law enforcement, people who work in government, activists, collectively have to come together and help shape and mold policy that can benefit everyone and not just a few.
So let me tell you what I think, and I'll get your reaction. And I think the best way is to kind of go back and say, where did so many of our debates arise from? We've been doing this for years. You and I personally, me and Stephen A., many of us in the sports world, and obviously so many of us in the country. And I think there's a fundamental disconnect, Damian, and I'll see if you agree or disagree. And I think the disconnect comes in between these two things. One, what the data says, and two, what your personal experience says. But I actually think I can understand that difference and start to see where they connect. So here's what I think. I know I've said this on ESPN's airwaves, and I know I've recently put study back into it, right? We look at what happened to George Floyd, and we say we have an outrageous system where unarmed black men are suffering at the hands of authoritarian police. But then I dive in and I go like this. I read, well, white people are numerically being killed by police officers at a greater rate than African Americans. then you say, hold on, Will. White people are a greater percentage of the population than African Americans. And you'd be absolutely correct, right? And then I'd say, well, then we have to normalize it for crime rates and neighborhoods because the police are going to be where the crime is more prevalent, correct? And the data says, well, that happens more often in black neighborhoods. So you're going to have more police interactions and more potential for violent interactions. And what you end up with, I think, and it's messy data, Damien. I don't trust anything totally because everybody puts out a different set of data, but it does come back to something akin to, yes, African Americans die at the hands of police at a greater rate per capita than whites. And then you say, well, how much of that is due to the crime rate? And you have the conversation. And that's a disconnect because many people see that and say, are we responding to videos and anecdotes? Or are we responding to something that shows up in broad ranging data?
So here's what I would say. Going back to the data that you told me about, as it relates to, you know, white people from a percentage standpoint die more from the hands of police than black people. Well, my thing would be, shouldn't you be outraged as well? Do you think that's right?
Well, my response to that would be that's true, and that's a separate conversation about the tactics of police, but I thought that was separate than the question of whether or not this is a systemically race-based problem.
Well, listen, both can be true. I've said this to many people before. You know, when we talk about policing, because in my mind, police should be trying to de-escalate situations. So a component of this is how is our training? What is going on as far as police training is concerned? That's a component in this whole pie that we're talking about.
And let me tell you something really quickly on that. We totally agree.
Yep.
On that, we totally agree. I think de-escalation, and you used a term earlier, community policing, is a need. I support law enforcement, but I think law enforcement has largely been militarized over the last 20 years. Budgets have gone up, weapons have gone up, tactics have gone up, and I'm sympathetic to what the officers have to deal with on the streets. But if you approach every situation as though it's going to be antagonistic, it tends to become antagonistic. I would encourage you or anybody to say, to see that it's not just a race issue, go look at the video of a guy in Arizona named Daniel Shaver.
I've talked about that as well.
It's terrible.
I've talked about it as well.
It's terrible. He was a pest control guy in a hotel in Arizona, and he had a BB gun that he was illustrating to his friends how he got pest birds away from homes, and that led to one of the most violent things I've seen in interaction between anyone and police. But I think it's important we address the race side of this as well, Damien, because that is at the core, I think, of these protests, don't you?
Well, absolutely. You know, I've always said, you know, this is not a new phenomenon. It's just being filmed. You know, that's what's going on. But I also want to talk about, you know, what you had brought up about, the community, black community, you know, as far as police going more to black community because of crime. And there are many aspects as to why that is the case. A lot, you know, a good portion of it is social, economic, you know, status and just the proximity of who you are around. That's a big part of this whole, you know, big part of this whole pie, but that's an even bigger discussion. I want to keep our focus on, you know, on the issue at hand. And so for me, we have to, at the end of the day, Will, and it's quite clear to me, I want justice is blind. That's what I care about. I've seen too many cases where we've seen video happen, and then all of a sudden, police get off scot-free when it's pretty clear. And I know, you know, with your background being a lawyer and sometimes you can look at things from a legal perspective where you can find loopholes. But when you keep seeing these things, these incidents occur time and time again, it brings about frustration. And when frustration builds, guess what happens over time? These types of protests, they boil over. You know, Martin Luther King made a statement. He said, you know, when you have justice delayed in the wintertime, summer is for the riots. I mean, that's basically what you're talking about. When you have justice delayed, when you keep seeing a repeat of these type of things happening, it's going to spur uprising. So that's why I said we need to take a long look at the whole system. Put a spotlight on every inch of the system and see where is the disconnect. What can we improve? How can we improve it?
Well, that's where I wanted to go.
It goes back to people.
Yes. Yes. See, that's the thing, Damian, and I've always believed that. All change is effectuated at the individual level. All of this is about what's in your brain and your heart. And that's where I wanted to go with this, man. So, you know, I am versed on that data I just laid out to you, but I don't think that's the end of the story. That's what I want to say to you or anyone else. And I think that's the growth that I've gone through over the last couple of years. I don't think the data is the end of the story. I think it's a big part of it, and it should always be brought in so we have, as you and I were talking about with the media earlier, proper context. But I think this as well, man. I've learned to appreciate others' lived experiences. And let me say what I mean about that, okay? That's not that I have, achieved some next level of racial enlightenment. It's, I think as I get older, Damian, I become more open to emotion. You know what I mean? Like, more willing to access empathy, which isn't an easy emotion, honestly, for me to access. I can just tell you that as a human being. Like, I'm very black and white, logic and reason, and this is what the facts tell us. But I know this as well. If so many people you respect, and for that matter, so many people you don't even know are telling you this is the way something is, you should listen. So here's what I know. You're telling me this. Marcus Spears is telling me this. Louis Riddick is telling me this. These are all people I have relationships with and I have mutual respect with. There are people on the streets telling me this is my interaction. This is my life. This is what I know. No matter what your data says, this is what I have lived. And I know that has value. I know it is also part of the picture. And what my takeaway is, and this is where my friendship with you is important, is because you are going to be somebody who's real with me and tells me if I'm right or wrong. My takeaway is, while the data says a certain thing, your life experience probably tells you I've had either a negative interaction with the police, I've been pulled over as you described before, I have been looked at side-eyed because I look different. And all of these negative interactions, and certainly if the police are in your neighborhood on a more frequent basis, build up. And then when you see George Floyd under that officer's knee, you don't see George Floyd, honestly. You see everybody you know, and perhaps most emotionally, your kids, your brother, your family. That's the culmination of all of those little negative experiences you have, and it may not have been, right? One where you almost died at the hands of a police or even saw somebody. But what I'm thinking I'm understanding better is that doesn't show up in your data, Will. All those negative experiences. And it doesn't mean necessarily that cops are targeting African Americans for death. It doesn't mean that. But what it means is that our experiences with these situations are vastly different.
You're right, man. You're right. We've been agreeing on a lot of things in this whole talk, man. I feel like we're having a TED talk to a lot of people right now on this topic, man. But man, let me just tell you, man. I feel exhausted. Will, I've been feeling exhausted for a long time, man, because, you know, this is a topic, this is something where I think black folks have experienced this for a long time. And haven't had many outlets to really voice frustration. You know, because a lot of times, man, when you when you see things like this, you can't really talk about it on certain platforms because it's quote unquote bad for business. But I appreciate us having this, being able to talk about this, man. I really do, because this is therapeutic for me to be able to say these things and for us to really have an honest conversation. It's just good for the soul, man. And I just want everybody out there to understand that you don't have to be afraid. You don't have to be afraid. Nobody's trying to take anything away from you. At the end of the day, Black folks just want a more perfect union. That's it. Nothing more, nothing less. That's all Black folks want. It's just happy straight across the board. And let the cards go where they may. So I needed this, man. And I really thank you for us doing this. I really do, man. I you're my brother, man. And there's certain sect of people that they call you this and they call you that. And I just tell them, man, y'all don't know. Y'all don't know that man. Y'all don't know that man. Y'all haven't had discussions like we've had. And that's part of the problem too. People are so quick to judge a book by its cover, man. It's so frustrating, and it's part of the reason why we're at where we're at right now. People have certain assumptions. And if we can peel back from that, get away from that, and really get to know people, can you imagine the change that can come about?
Man, like, I just really, don't know how you do
can
it.
Can you really, can I you imagine the change?
I don't obviously know how to do it, Damien. I'm obviously not that great at it. What I mean by that is, first of all, you don't need to thank me, because what you're talking to me about is our relationship. We're friends, and it's been a earned relationship over years. By the way, I know there were times you probably had serious questions about who I was. You had to have. Right? Especially when you were getting to know me early on, or perhaps before you even knew me and you saw me on TV. I mean, hell, you thought I wanted to fight you one time over Baker Mayfield and Hugh Jackson, right? Luckily, I was on
Boy,
remote.
That was something.
Now, it's what I am telling you is, all that you and I are doing right now are just being two dudes. I'm not even media broadcasting, right? I'm just talking to a guy that I respect and like, and who I'm not required to agree with on everything in life. You know what I mean? And I'd probably be a terrible politician. Who knows what kind of mass broadcaster I'm going to end up being. Because I don't know how to do this in a way that makes everybody happy at the same time. All I know how to do is have a conversation with you that's real. And then maybe somebody else hears that, you know?
I agree, man. I agree.
I appreciate you, though. I don't know. I don't know if I did too much talking. I don't know if I did not enough listening.
This was great, man. It's just to be able to just, like you said, chop it up as two dudes, man. Two
right.
dudes.
Right.
Just be real and honest. And some things we might not agree on, and that's okay. That's okay. I don't want anyone that if I agree with somebody 100%, then I'm walking away from that.
Right. So it's skeptical. So boring and uninteresting, right?
No, yeah. Like, I want to be challenged. I want to be challenged. Like if we have two different schools of thought, that to me, I embellish that. I love that. To be able to have a debate about it. Because guess what? I'm going to learn something. You're going to learn something. And at the end of it, we're going to come out better for it.
Well, I'm not under any delusion that this is like this is going to make some big change. I'm not under any delusion. This is, you know, last week when you and I talked, I said it's a start. So is this. It's always a start. And I just think this is, I do think we share that belief as well. Really, in the end, this is all about individual level. Like, you know, who can you be yourself with another person tomorrow? You know, I think that's, I don't know. I think that's the beginning of the story and probably the end of the story. I know you talked about politics and voting and effectuating change and systemic issues. And I'm not saying those aren't real, but I don't think those do anything if individuals don't take it on themselves to just be people with each other. And as you said, understand each other, you know? And, I don't know. I enjoy it. So I appreciate you, bud. I appreciate you doing this. Like I said, it's probably just a start.
I appreciate you, my brother. And listen, you know we can have these type of discussions anytime, man. So let's continue the dialogue. And I challenge everyone out there listening to have this type of dialogue with people wherever you are.